Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Fred Kopstek, author of the book Selling Through Partnering Skills and founder of Brindis, a specialist sales performance consultancy.
I can see that sales is taking very much a move towards being more collaborative than ever. You know, we can go through all the evolution of sales and the stuff that we saw in the 60s, psychological selling, if you like, and 80s, close, and of course the consultative stuff of the 90s. But now people are having to be more collaborative. I would say that even more so now, salespeople are going to have to work tightly with customers, help them, guide them, be in the thing together. But I came across this concept of partnering skills, PQ. Now, everyone will probably have heard of IQ, and I'm sure many people will have heard of EQ, emotional intelligence. And I think of PQ, or partnering intelligence, as almost like the lesser-known cousin in the family. And these are the skills that somebody who's good at partnering will have and are able to use, and often use quite consciously and quite deliberately. It does not matter whether you're in direct or indirect. If you're doing any kind of, not purely transactional, but anything above that, these skills, if you can get your head around them and start to use them in the approach that's most suitable for you, they're going to make you better.
Fred Kopstek is a consultant, trainer, coach, and an expert helping sales professionals around the world to improve their performance and unleash their full potential. With his unique style and pragmatic approach, Fred has worked in more than 35 countries, delivering projects that range from implementing a European academy for a leading beer brand, developing sales skills in the Middle East for global healthcare companies, and introducing account development and sales leadership models in Latin America and Europe for IT and engineering multinationals. Always focusing on the desired outcomes, Fred's approach sees him work with his clients to discover new and more powerful ways of how they can do business, build mutually beneficial relationships with their customers, and increase revenue. Now, listen to this great episode with Fred Kopstek, author, Selling Through Partnering Skills. Fred, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm really thrilled to have you here, especially because I'm very intrigued by the book that you have written. But before that, tell us a bit about yourself and how this book came about.
Sure. Yeah. Well, firstly, thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure when somebody wants to talk about me, about the book. So thank you very much. I'm essentially a sales trainer in simple terms. But that involves a lot more. So the training element, the classroom stuff, the coaching, consultancy sometimes. And I've been doing that for 20-something years. You know, so it's quite a lot of experience in that. I've been very lucky in that I've traveled all around the world. You know, we used to get on planes to go to do jobs. Now I say I just travel all around the house to take the computer to a different room. But I've traveled around the world. I've seen lots of different types of selling, so at different levels of complexity, different products, different services. So quite a lot of experience that I wanted to sort of bring into the book, if you like. I always try to keep very, very current in what I'm delivering. I think that's, you know, that's what I sell. It's part of my job. And so I just started to really sort of see where is sales going? There's a lot of change going on. And so it's kind of those elements, I think, that has made me decide, right, now is the time to really put put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, if you like, and start to put this thing together. Because I think there's, you know, some interesting things that I've got to offer, if you like.
Sure. One thing we don't have a lack of is books about sales. There are literally, literally hundreds written every year. And when you think of writing a book, you would not want to write about something which has been written about. So how did you think that a book on partnering in sales is overdue?
Okay, so you're right. There are hundreds, there's thousands of books out there. I've read lots of them. I'm a sales geek. I love this stuff. And I love thinking about approaches and thinking what can make people current and what can make people effective. End of the day, that's what I'm about. I want to help people get better at what they do. And my world is sales world, so that's where I try to practice that. And as I say, you know, with the experience with the stuff that I've been doing, I can see that sales is taking very much a move towards being more collaborative than ever. You know, we can go through all the evolution of sales and the stuff that we saw in the 60s, you know, psychological selling, if you like, and 80s, close, 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 and of course the consultative stuff of the 90s. But now people are having to be more collaborative. This was pre-COVID. I would say that even more so now, salespeople are going to have to work tightly with customers, help them, guide them, be in the thing together. And, you know, I was very aware of this and lots of the brilliant sales models in the books that you talk about that are already out there. But I came across this concept of partnering skills, PQ. Now, everyone will probably have heard of IQ. And I'm sure many people will have heard of EQ, emotional intelligence. And I think of PQ, or partnering intelligence, as almost like the lesser known cousin in the family. And these are the skills that somebody who's good at partnering will have and are able to use, and often use quite consciously and quite deliberately. So I looked at this actually because I was doing quite a lot of work in channel management at the time. I was doing quite a lot with full-on indirect sales, partnering sales, if you like. But as I looked at these skills, I thought, this is relevant to any salesperson. It does not matter whether you're in direct or indirect. If you're doing any kind of, not purely transactional, but anything above that, these skills, if you can get your head around them and start to use them in the approach that's most suitable for you, they're going to make you better. You know, it's like a veneer. It's an icing on the cake, if you like. And so the more I looked at it, the more I thought, well, how can I get these things on one hand with the stuff that people are probably already doing quite well on the other hand, and bring them together to make sure their approach is really refined, really good for the current environment. And that's kind of how the thinking came about, and what I've done in the book really is bring those two things together through a framework which I developed to help people's thinking to be that more sophisticated salesperson, if you like.
The basis of any partnership is trust, right? So a lot of what we are doing today, and especially with technology, with surreptitious tracking of user behavior and all that, we are actually doing something quite opposite to building trust, right? Yet customers will not buy from anyone they don't trust. None of us will. Even if you are going into a store, if you don't trust the store, you're not going to buy from them, right? So
very true, yes.
So what sort of triggered this or cemented your thought that, you know what, PQ is something we need to talk about and bring into the mainstream discourse?
Well, interestingly, if you look, PQ has six elements. They're all interrelated. They all build off each other. When you talk about them, obviously, you kind of have to do them in order. You can't talk about all at once. But whenever I speak about the elements, I always speak about trust first. That's the first element. Because exactly as you've said, you know, it is the basis of relationships. You know, it's a basis of good, solid communication. You know, communication is a sales skill. It's something that people need to be able to do. So I looked at this. I thought, oh, yeah, kind of interesting. Yeah, it makes sense. Kind of and moving through the elements of PQ, it's kind of, well, trust is all about being able to work together and sort of having mutually beneficial outcomes. Oh, look, second element of partnering skills is having a win-win orientation. Now, ever since I've been involved with sales, that's been something that's been drummed into me. And then as I've taken on a sales trainer role, it's something that underpins every single piece of work that I do. So we talk about win-win, and I looked at this and went, Well, the next one is interdependence. We've got to collaborate. We've got to work together. My success is going to be based on some of your success, and you're going to have to do some things. I'm going to have to do some things. I'm going to lose a bit of control here. So I'm going to have to trust you. And so these things keep repeating back to do that. And it's as I was just reading through this stuff, it's all like the hairs on the back of my neck sort of went, this stuff is so about modern selling. I want to get it out there. I'm going to start using it. I can do so much in the training that I'm doing, but if I can sort of push it out on a broader, you know, broader spectrum, then fantastic. You know, other people can start to use this. I'd be very, very happy if I can sort of contribute in that way.
So what's the framework that you came up with?
Yeah. So as I say, you've got the partnering skills on one stage. So trust, win-win orientation, interdependence, then the other three that we talk about are self-disclosure,
comfort and change, and future orientation. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So they're on one hand. So then we look at the other, lots of good selling methodologies and things. And I wouldn't ask somebody to rewrite those, bringing these things together. So the framework, if you like, is the value framework, V-A-L-U-E. You know, yeah, of course, it's about adding value, etc. But it's actually one that I'd seen a version of or something that gave me the basis with my thinking somewhere else. And this is from the sphere of customer success management. So customer success management, very big in IT sector, particularly where it's people buy stuff, but we want them to get the outcomes. They want to get the benefit of the stuff they've bought and ensure that happens. And again, that just resonated me. It sung to me that kind of, well, that's surely what all salespeople would want, is that I sell you something. You've got to get out of it what you've been buying from me. So I looked at it and thought, I can just tinker with this a little bit. I can just play with some of the wording and then some of the behaviors and sort of best practice that sits within it to give us this framework where we can mesh these two things together. Yeah, so whatever way you're selling, because you might be selling fairly simplistically, you know, low value, low complexity. You could be in an enterprise sale. It could be a strategic sale over a 2-year sales cycle. Concept is that value framework still will work because you can put into each of these parts of it the bits which makes most sense for you. So it's not sort of fully dogmatic, if you like, as in you must do this, 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 this. It's you make it work for you. Now, I'll give you some suggestions in the book. The book can only be so long. So I use it if I'm consulting, say, okay, well, the company I'm working with, okay, so at this level, they need to do this. In this part, they need to do this. In this part, they need to do this. That's what's going to work for these guys. I can pick and choose. And of course, if they've already invested a lot of time and effort in sales process and certain things, well, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We will take those and say, yeah, let's integrate this into the way we can use and just keep this PQ thinking, this partnering ethos mindset to really kind of turbocharge the stuff that they're doing. I don't know if you're going to ask me to share the value framework and what those. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course. It's not a secret. You know, it's in a book. Go buy the book. No, of course I wouldn't do that. No, you know, again, like I said, I want this stuff out there, people thinking about it and using it. So the V of value is about validation. Validate. So in old fashioned sales terminology, we talk about qualification. Is this a real opportunity? Is this a real kind of prospect? Is it somebody that I can work with? And yes, everyone will have their favorite way of qualifying and validating. So there's MENT and BANT and MAN-TC and Scotsman and all, whatever, you know, pick your favorite. You know, I don't want to change that. You know, you can have an ideal customer profile, all of those things, whatever you're using. What I suggest, though, is adding another element to it, which is do some kind of psychological qualification. Because it does take two to tango. And yes, I want to work with a partnering type mindset. I'm going to use this ethos. But if I'm not going to get it back, it's going to make it very difficult for me to do that. So just add in another layer to think, this is how I need to operate. Will I get this stuff back? So we can validate and think, yes, this is looking like a very good way in which we can work well together to create mutual value. So now I need to A, align. So the alignment is almost like the homework, the desk work. It's the preparation. It's the understanding about the organization that I want to go and sell to. Yeah, KYC, know your customer. So it's, again, it depends on the level of how much prep you would put into it. how much prep. There is always, always prep. Yeah, but it's just thinking about, you know, I need to know about them. I need to know where I could potentially add value, what that might look like. And again, more simple sale, it could be quite an easy thing to do. More complex is quite a lot of work to think about, well, what is this value proposition going to look like? Because that will help us in the next part of L for leverage. So leveraging all that work, leveraging this area in which I think I can add value, and having those conversations. Because in the end of the day, people do need to work with other people. And we need to make sure that all the different parts of the buying committee or the decision-making unit are really understanding what they're getting from it. So that's the L part. U is underpinned. So, okay, yes, we can see this. There's certainly lots of opportunity. There's potential here. It's all very exciting. Yeah, I can take some pain away from you. I can give you gain as well. All the good stuff that we could talk about. I need to prove that. Underpin is propping up. I need to prove that. So I need to get the right proposal to you. I need to make the right pitch, the right presentation. It needs to go to the right people. I know this is a matter quite close to your heart. And I've really got to make sure that that is landing correctly with the customer at the core of all the stuff I'm saying. And that's the main takeaway from that. So many people are too self-centered, can be so customer-centered. So this is how we can work together, which hopefully keeps the thing moving on. And the E is about then evolving the relationship, because we're talking more here about longer term ongoing sales opportunities. So that's the V-A-L-U-E. Validate, align, leverage, underpin, and evolve.
It's time for a short break. Fred outlined to me the value framework that he writes about in the book. And I asked Fred to narrate some instances where he saw the elements of his framework play out. Fred had great stories to share. Coming up after the break, stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink. Right before the break, I asked Fred to share some stories where he saw elements of his value framework play out. Let us listen in. Can you relate some actual stories of customers where you saw each of these playing out? So, I mean, which sort of, again, sort of dovetailed back to your framework?
Yeah, and again, another thing I do in the book is sort of just say, well, sales, there are different levels of it. As I've said, this value and complexity type model, and go, I call it, for want of labels, and people tend to have their own, but I'll talk about a classic sale being quite simple. Then a more consultative is the word I use. I'm happy with solution sell. For me, they're very, very similar. Yeah, we could debate long into the evening, I'm sure, but it's very similar. But as we move up the spectrum, we're into a more value-based sale. So that's probably more of the kind of thinking about how I can bring something to the party. Top end, there is enterprise. Hey, if you want to call it strategic, I'm not going to argue. I think it's the characteristic of the thing
right.
We're doing.
Right.
And so I've worked with companies on all levels there. And, you know, some of the work I have quite enjoyed is working with a brewery. I did a lot of research in that one. Working with a brewery, which actually, when you look at it, you'd say their sale is probably more classic because they've got quite a lot of meetings that they have with their customers. But the value framework still works. They've got to make sure that, the customer can buy the beer from them. Where can they add value? Because it's not just about selling beer. It's about actually it's helping them to build their business. It could be the club, it could be the bar, it could be the nightclub, whatever. How do you have a conversation with the different people involved? It's not usually just one person still, even on quite a simple sale. How do you write the proposal? How do you get that through? how do you then keep that going on? So you know, we talk about rate of sale in that industry. So in quite a simplistic thing, yes, it works. Yeah. Guys in IT, or I've done quite a lot of work with people selling chemicals as well. Now, chemicals are about as much as a commodity as you can get, if you think about it. It has to be the same as the competitor to do the job it has. But the sale is so complex. I mean, these are big numbers with lots of people involved, lots of potential, where engineers get involved because it has to be the right formulation. Like we said, procurement are all over this. Yeah, financial options are very important on it. We'll talk about sometimes where the chemicals are being used and how it might actually impact on how the company makes their own sale. So you start with their marketing department. So again, that bigger ticket stuff and more ongoing stuff, absolutely, I'll come back and go, yeah, this stuff fits. But they're using slightly different models and slightly different things that you would slot into the framework. But still, it's a useful way to clarify and form your thinking. I sometimes think of the framework a little bit like a chocolate box. You know, you've got the little squares where the chocolates will go, but you pick what chocolates you like in there. Yeah, I hate the orange chocolates. I think they're disgusting. I would throw those away all the time. I really love coffee creams. I put more coffee creams in than I would the orange bits, and the caramel ones pointless. Yeah, absolutely near there. But you might say, no, Fred, I love the caramel ones. I want to put, well, that suits you better. So you put the chocolates in your box, you know, or you put the sales practices, models, methodologies, pieces of equipment that you're using, your sales enablement. It will all fit within there, but this will drive a clearer thinking of helping you with your shift to becoming more and more collaborative, which is where the world is taking us in selling, I think.
That's an interesting point you make, because I was wondering, why did you want to go through the various kinds of sales processes in the beginning portion of the book? And you have sort of answered that question, because I understand that you are not trying to say this works. I mean, this is not my way or the highway kind of approach. It doesn't matter where you are. You can plug in the PQ element into what you are doing and still get more success.
Dead right. And that, you know, you want the kind of the behind the scenes and the thinking of the author, if you like, yeah. Is because I think if I'd have been paid on people saying to me, this won't work in my industry, more than the day rate or the project rate, then I'd be far richer now. it's just something we hear, oh, no, that won't work. So I know what salespeople are like. So, okay, beginning, there are different sorts of sales. You are one of these. I recognize that this book is written with all of these in mind. There we go. Now settle down and carry on reading it.
Right.
No, if you is, like, I mean, that's fair. Probably being, it's being a little bit blunt, but yeah. I needed to get that out straight away. This concept and this best practice and way of working it can add value to you in whichever sort of sphere of sales you're operating in. But that's why I did that.
Let me focus a bit on PQ. I mean, you said it was the lesser known cousin or brother of IQ and EQ. Why is it so? And how scientific is this matrix?
Okay, so IQ has been around longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, people have been tested in IQ. How intelligent are you since the 30s, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it only tests part of intelligence, doesn't it? It's the sort of the more spatial, verbal, numerical intelligence.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the 80s, wasn't it, really, where Daniel Goleman, as probably much as anyone else, really pushed the concept of EQ and saying, hey, look, we're only really thinking about half of what makes somebody really successful. And the studies of EQ show actually that probably has a bigger impact on your success. There's some very interesting stuff around that. And that's got a lot of publicity, if you like, got a lot of stuff highlighted in the 80s. PQ lesser so, because it's just not been talked about as much, I think. But the science behind it, if you like, it was a guy called Steve Dent, who was working very much in more formal partnerships and more formal business alliances. You know, the high-end stuff where airlines might work together to create the sort of the way in which they operate to share routes and airports and this kind of stuff. And he was looking at, you know, why were some successful, why were not? And he did the research into this. And this is why I like PQ as well, because it's not a sort of a let's sit down the pub on a Friday afternoon and make up a concept type thing, which is all good fun, you know. Yeah. But it's these are the things. People are doing something here. I want to understand it. And so he started to isolate that these elements were the things which people would be highly skilled in and would be tending to do, sometimes unconsciously. But of course, we know if we can then raise the awareness of this is what you do, make it conscious and make it more repeatable, that's what would make the partnerships work better. And so, I mean, a lot of his work is that he did understand these. He then sort of got his concepts validated and verified, you know, psychologically, more robustly in I should know these off the top of my head, but a couple of American universities. So, you know, if people do push back to, well, PQ is just a made up thing. It isn't. There's been quite a lot of work in it. Mm. I've not put it in the book. I didn't put a lot around that whole process. Mm. Again, I'm writing it for salespeople. I think they probably go, oh, just does it work? You know, yes. Okay. I can see there is some substance behind it. That's great. I can look that up if I want. Let's get into the, how can I use this stuff?
Right.
And that's what I've done, is sort of take it and then just take it a bit of poetic license with it and just morphed it and made it a little bit more accessible and obvious, as in what that means in a selling role rather than a more pure partnering role, if you like.
Got it.
I'm not changing it massively, though, because obviously I need to stay close to the foundational research, if you like.
You talk about how the future is going to unfold and in sales at the end of the book, right? And I'm just wondering, what do you see? Where do you see this going? I would like you to talk about where you think this is headed.
Where is sales headed? Oh, if I had a crystal ball and could predict this 100%. I think it probably doesn't take a crystal ball to think. I mean, obviously, virtual selling was kind of starting, but we've all been forced into it, and it sort of made its entrance far faster and far more completely than probably it would have done. And I think it's here to stay. Again, that's probably not a massively brave prediction. I think there are some people that are going, yeah, well, let's just wait until it gets back to normal and we'll be okay. And I kind of picture these guys sort of sat at the door with their sort of briefcase packed, waiting to go out for meetings again. And I'm thinking, guys, please, please, please see the light, because that's not going to happen. You know, there's customers, there's people that I'm working with are just saying, we can go into site, but nobody else can. Mm. I had a meeting with the managing director the other day, and he wants me to come to site. The board would not allow him. So, you know, these guys sat the briefcase, you're going to have to get better at doing stuff virtually. And God knows how long COVID is going to be around for. But when it, let's say it went away tomorrow, I think the practices of virtual, people are actually getting quite comfortable with and are saying, you know what, actually, it's pretty cool because deals can move along faster. Yeah, look at the hassle we had just connecting on license to us.
Yeah.
Right, but what happens if we're trying to say, well, we've got, big sales meeting coming up soon. Oh, brilliant. When's that? Oh, it's in October. Hmm. Right. So now we're going to wait till October to have a conversation that actually we could have, as long as we all sort of give a little bit on getting up earlier or going to bed later,
right,
we can have. And rather than saying, because we've had to wait, let's make a great big deal of this meeting, it's we only need to talk for 20 minutes to say, right, you're doing that, I'm doing that, he's doing that. Great. Well, let's do that. Let's get back together 2 weeks' time. Bang. So virtual, people will start to see this. They'll start to realize that actually the collaboration tools within it, when we get a little bit more comfortable with whiteboarding and we start to sort of share files better and look at things, and I know this is massively part of an area you're into, it's like preaching to the converted, if you like, it can speed things up quite a lot because we just get used to this means of communication. I don't, though, think that's it. Sell the car. You don't need to buy shoes ever again. You'll be working in your slippers forever. I don't think that's going to be the case. And so I'm using the language, and I know other people are using the language, of hybrid salespeople.
Right.
So it's sales guys that very comfortable doing the stuff like this. They'll probably go virtual meeting, virtual meeting, virtual meeting. Now we're having a live meeting because it does make sense at this stage in the process to get key stakeholders in a room. Actually, we do need to do a factory visit. They want to see where we make the stuff.
Right.
We've got to do demos. We've got to do tastings. I work with companies that sell flavor. They're working virtually.
Yeah.
You know, I can send you samples. You can test. So it'll be people that can sort of just go, well, this is great. I've got another string to my bow. I've got another tool. I'm quite happy to go and stand in the boardroom. I'm quite happy to talk to a boardroom over this means and emails and. So I think hybrid selling is the way that it's going in actually the day-to-day sales activity. But all of that activity is about becoming more and more collaborative. How do we pick the people that we can work together? Because I can help you, you can help me, we can move the thing forward faster, and we might bring other people in. So it's not just two parties necessarily, or two companies. So I think collaborative hybrid would be the, if you wanted a two-word answer, or on the two-minute answer,
this is great. I think it makes complete sense, because I think there is no running away from win-win. You cannot anymore win yourself and let the other party lose from both sides. The customer can't win and the seller lose and vice versa. Both bring value to the table, the opportunities and the solutions and so on. That's a great point. Anything you think you'd like to talk about the book, which I might not have asked you in the meantime?
Well, I think we've covered a lot. I know you said to me at the beginning, we'll have a nice order to it and then just rip the order up and jumped around it. But hey, that's fine. It doesn't matter too much to me.
Yeah.
Mind works that way sometimes. I think, you give me a brilliant, brilliant platform to share the stuff that's in there. We talk about sales is changing, or I talk about sales is changing. I talk about PQ being something that's very interesting for us to understand. I talk about here are some really good, solid ways of working. And in the book, there's a lot of reference to other books and other, excellent sales writing.
Yes.
Why not? They've done a far better job than me in explaining how they've researched stuff. But then let's bring it together using value. And, we step through the value framework, and it is a framework rather than a process, I think. And again, we might be talking semantics here, but it's pick the bits that work for you. Just because in the book, because I have to write in a certain way, I might say that this tool is probably more used in value-based selling. If you say, well, actually, I'd look and say I'm probably more classic, but we do that. Brilliant. If that's working for you, great.
Sure.
do the right thing, but use this to inform your thinking to make sure you're doing the right things.
Absolutely. Makes complete sense.
I like my analogies. I like the food analogies as well. I don't know. Maybe it's near lunchtime here in the UK. But it's almost like I would say that if I work in a company, they could say, well, they might see this PQ thing and say, Fred, this is great. We want to put the icing on the cake for what we've got. And I'll say, super. I will come along and let's put the icing on the cake. Let's just have a look at the cake, though, that we're going to ice and make sure it's there. And we can look at it and go, yeah, you've got such a solid way of working. That is exactly what we're doing. We're putting icing on and a cherry on the top. It could be that we say, you know what? We're not really icing a cake here. The cake isn't such a good thing. It's falling apart. It's not so solid. We need to be baking it better. But what we can do is we can sort of bake the cake with all the lovely bits we're putting the icing in it as we do this. So it could be something that's quite a large transformation for somebody, or it could be something where they take it and say, yeah, no, this is great. I can just add the bits that you're talking about here to what I'm doing successfully already. So, I again.
So you have 12 chapters. So you're telling me about the structure, how you actually put it all together, the narrative flow.
Yeah. So, a little bit just about why the book and how you can use it. Thinking about changing world of sales, it was written pre-COVID. As I say, you could write a whole book that thick on it. So then we just think about what's selling, where selling come from, that evolutionary thing that I spoke about, and then those different sales types, just so that people can go, okay, I'm more or less there. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And as I say, with my sort of hidden agenda, it's like, don't say to me it won't work for me, because it will.
Yeah.
Then go into them a little bit more and saying, okay, so this is how I'm defining it. and again, I'm not saying it's the be all and end all definition. It's just a way to understand that there is these slight differences.
Right.
But I do talk about shades of grey. It's shades of grey along a spectrum where you'll be nearer to one than the other. That's the selling bit. So then we go, okay, partnering skills, what are they? Yeah. So a little bit about IQ and EQ, like I did when we were chatting. We talk about partnering, and I do spend a little bit of time talking about pure partnering, so where it originally came from.
Right.
Because again, if that's what we're using as the basis of what we're thinking about, it's useful to have that.
Sure.
You know, and there might be channel managers reading it, or people go, actually, no, I am selling pure partnerships. This is the best chapter. This is the best, the best bit, because you're talking how to make a partnership. And you said something earlier, and I wrote down here a paraphrase of what you said, which was, if you're going into business with somebody, you are effectively partnering with them anyway, whether you call it or not, you know. So, so I talk about that, and then we talk about just that mindset that the salesperson needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
So then we talk more about how we can just start to think about them in sales. So I break down those elements. So trust, how does that look in sales? So I'm getting more specific into sales world here.
Yeah.
Win-win, again, that's probably the easiest bit to write.
Yeah.
Interdependence, okay, that's building on the win-win we've had. Self-disclosure and feedback is quite interesting, because it's not just getting feedback from customers, it's giving feedback to customers. It's also giving information that you might not think, well, why would I tell them that stuff? Because it'll build the relationship better.
Right.
We talk about future orientation. That's, again, because that's one of the partnering skills, and that's where we need to be looking, both for our decision-making, but where we can add value better. And then we talk about change, comfort with change. So I should probably, if I was rewriting it, I'd probably start with that one now, as in we've been plunged into huge amounts of change. But what I talk about more in the book is that the salesperson is a change agent. They've got to help customers with change. More often than not, they need to be doing something differently and might not know how to do that. So understanding change a little bit, helping people, facilitating them with that makes a lot of sense. We then got a little section. People love, I've found when I've been doing training, whenever we're doing anything where people understand more about themselves, it always goes down really well. So we've got a little bit of a kind of a self-analysis tool. So a little questionnaire where you just think, you know, where do I sit on each of those? Which am I strong in? Which can I develop more in? We do that. I then introduce value framework just as a concept.
Right.
As I talked about there. But then we break it down bit by bit. And so there's a chapter for each of those sections. So chapter on validate, where within the chapter there's validate at classic selling level and move it on to consultative and move it on and move it on. So it kind of build. Yeah. And repeat. So then it underpin classic consultative value-based enterprise. So it's kind of almost getting more sophisticated as you read through the chapter. You know, I wouldn't say to somebody, oh, I've got to my bit, stop. It's look, because you could still say, well, what you're talking about there, I don't want to repeat myself, but I can pull that back in and do what I'm doing. Sure. Yeah, dead right. So that takes up a decent chunk, if you like, because the five chapters, five elements.
Right.
And then the future bit there, it's actually that part is more, well, what's your future? What are you going to do with it? It's all very well reading a book and having knowledge, but it's about application. It's about doing something.
Sure.
It's great, I've done it. I know more now. Brilliant. But what are you going to do with that? So how can you, either as a sales leader, use this to help your team, or as a sales practitioner, as a salesperson, what can you do? How can you apply some of this? What little changes are you going to make to improve yourself? And there's some suggestions and some trigger questions, if you like, to get people thinking about what can they do to make a difference for themselves. Because that's the bit that floats my boat.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to help people.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement.
PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
This is great, Fred. I really enjoyed chatting with you. And let's stay in touch and we'll talk again.
Yeah, let's do that.
Coming up in the next episode is a super entertaining conversation with Dhruv Nath, co-author of the book Funding Your Startups and Other Nightmares.
You learn as much from success stories as from failures. In fact, you probably learn more from failures, right? So nobody talks about failures because failures are always kept under the wraps. So what we said was, okay, we will have an equal number of successes and failures in our book. And that is how we expect the founder who's reading the book to learn. Final thing, very, very important. In fact, I would say that is the crux of the book. What we realized was, you know, it's very easy to tell stories. And this book is essentially about stories, right? It's about lots of stories. I think it has about 15 or 18 odd startup stories, right? And some of them are failures, some of them are successes. But the problem is, what do you take away from the story? Because ultimately, the idea is not that the founder remembers the story. The idea is the founder can apply the story to his environment, right? So what we said was, we will create a framework. And that framework I call persistent, right? The English word persistent. But persistent is actually an acronym. So each letter in the word persistent stands for something, right? And we said, persistent is the way to go in case you want to create a successful startup, A. And B, you want to get funding for that startup. Because what we say is, not only should the startup be persistent, follow the persistent framework, but the investor also looks for persistent startups.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss out a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.